The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
Becoming a father can be an exhilarating experience. But if you're poor, unemployed, or from a household where there was no father figure, your new role as a dad can sometimes be overwhelming. On this edition of UWM Today, we learn about a project that's trying to find ways of helping some men become better prepared for fatherhood. Joining us in the studio is Chris Barnikow. Chris is an associate professor in the College of Health Sciences, and David Pate, associate professor in the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare. And they both have collaborated on this really, really interesting project. David, why don't we begin with you? Give us a sense of how you went about beginning to ask questions that might get to the answers of how to be a better dad.
Well, we were given a unique opportunity to work with a community group. Right now, the group is called IMPACT, and the Medical College of Wisconsin, we also work with them as well. We're colleagues from there because they were interested in looking at how we can reduce infant mortality as it affects particularly poor people within the city of Milwaukee. As you know, infant mortality is a major issue here, and unfortunately, our rate surpasses some of the third world developing countries in terms of how they are being able to raise their children to the age of one. And because of also my long-term work in the city of Milwaukee since 1997, where I have provided a lot of work around looking at young men and their involvement with their children, they wanted to see if I would be willing to provide some qualitative methodological work to gather information from men on how they view the issue of infant mortality, but also particularly how they view prenatal care and postnatal care for the mothers of their children. The other unique thing about it, though, is because I can gather information that way, I can't gather information in a way that was more of an occupational therapy perspective, where you're looking at what are some of the key techniques you can use in order to ascertain what are some ways that people think about how to tell the mother of their child or how to work with the mother of their child in a way so that they can avoid this issue of infant mortality. So I was able to work with Chris and bring her into the fold, and we were very excited to work together, and it's been a marriage made in heaven because I'm come from my social welfare background, she comes from a health background, and our colleagues who are working with are very interested in how do you combine those two, provide social services, but also look at how you can provide better health care.
Is this the first time that a study has been constructed this way here in the city of Milwaukee?
I would say yes, it is. And thank you, David. I've enjoyed working with the group as an occupational therapist, very interested in how people are able to participate in daily life. And certainly the stories that we heard and what we learned from the fathers were very, very informative. I'm also interested in health literacy, and that is a tool, as David had mentioned, that can be used to help people participate in the growth and development of their children.
This is such an important issue because at the end of the day, how these men feel about themselves, their self-esteem, and how they act in terms of caring for their children has such a profound impact on the outcome of that child's life.
Exactly. You know, one thing that was really good about this project, too, is that we were able to use many of the community-based organizations that I've known for quite some time to be able to pull together men who were very interested and wanted to tell their story about how do I engage myself with the mother of my children when she has a child or even after she has a child. And we learned some really fascinating things, as Chris was saying, because some of it started with they didn't even know what the word infant mortality meant. They didn't know it was, and they didn't even know, as even though many of us who are educated and look at the newspapers on a daily basis and talk about it on a regular basis, they weren't even aware that Milwaukee had one of the worst infant mortality rates in the world.
And yet they're living right in the heart of the city.
And exactly, and they're dealing with it, and they're seeing, unfortunately, One of the things I am also studying is trauma. And so a lot of these men do see a lot of death. They do see a lot of hurt and pain, but they didn't understand that some of that was also children. They didn't understand it was children under the age of one. And so that's where it became really interesting to have these just regular conversations with these men in focus groups and in individual interviews, pretty much focus groups. I did individual interviews in another project, so I'm getting confused here. But basically, in the focus groups that we did, we were able to really learn some things that I just didn't understand were even going on. And I've done a lot of work with men over the last 20 years. But this particular area where we were able to hone in on one topic was just a really eye-opening experience for everybody on the team, for us as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you learned in these conversations with these men. Begin with Chris. From an occupational or health standpoint, you sat down and were face-to-face with men who sometimes were new parents, new fathers, and in other cases, they had children prior to you sitting down and having this first conversation.
Well, actually, David did most of the interviews and facilitated the focus group. So I was fortunate enough to look at the transcripts and really start tearing apart and piecing together what their stories were. And we heard a lot of very interesting and compelling stories about how dads were going to the schools. They went to their doctor's appointments, how they participated in everyday life of their children. But we also heard some of the barriers. There are barriers in the city of Milwaukee and living in the city that precluded them from participation in their fatherhood role. So some of the dads spoke about lack of opportunities, needing an education, how important that was. They also talked a little bit related to the trauma and the violence in the city and how that was really hard for them. They talked about stereotyping and racism and how that was challenging for them. But they did talk about their daily experiences, how they were actively engaged with the moms and with their children, but at the same time not recognizing the infant mortality rate in the community. And from a health literacy perspective, that's a health literacy issue because health literacy is really understanding health-related information, being able to apply it and make health decisions. And really what we found was that the social determinants of health, stress, the stress of the environment really influenced and does influence infant mortality in the community. And that was really the underlying notion of the study is how can we help reduce some of these social determinants that are negative or have a negative impact. And one way is to support the dads.
David, was it difficult to get these dads to open up, to share their story?
No. I've been doing this work now for 20 years, 20 years as a researcher and 30 years as a social worker. And so most of my training has always been, and I'm an affiliate of the Institute for Research on Poverty in Madison. And so one of the things I initially did when I decided to go back to school after working as a social worker for 15 years, and my work has only been with African-American men since I graduated from college, I've been able to hone in on a way of being able to make the men feel respected as well as being able to feel that what their voices, what they're telling me will be used in a way that it will be put forth to change policy and also to be heard in opportunities like this, as well as opportunities where I'm on the newspaper or somewhere, I'm going to make sure they're heard. So it wasn't very hard because I've also developed a relationship with so many community groups within Milwaukee that when I ask for people to pull people together, they're always very willing to do that because I'm someone that's trusted and they know that I'm going to use information to make sure that it's going to be used in a way that's not to stereotype the men further, but also to show that these men are just like every other dad in every other city who's just trying to take care of his kid and make sure the kids are healthy. The one thing that Chris just said that I wanted to hone in on about the social determinants of health is that, you know, we did work with a group of men who were very, very poor. But for across the socioeconomic levels of all black people, we're seeing this infant mortality rate. We just happened to work with very poor men. And I think that was a really important issue here to really kind of help me get further clarity on what's the next level of area of work I want to do, because I just think that men, unfortunately, don't take health seriously. Unfortunately, we have a very high mortality rate for black men. And therefore, just because of that, this might be a way to change their health habits around through the way of health literacy. So I've learned to appreciate something an occupational therapist does. I have to admit, I didn't understand it before until I hurt my back. I don't know if that was really an occupational therapist's job to fix my back. But I've learned that you really have to understand how do you get the people to understand how do you break it down. And Chris and I were both appointed to the White House Committee on Text for Baby, which is another way of trying to look at how do you reduce infant mortality because of the work we're doing here. And that, so I think that what we've done in terms of being able to gauge the men, which was really simple to do, and also to use information we used very early on to kind of get it out there, has been quite a good opportunity for us to say, one, men are important, and two, they really are engaged with their children.
Mm-hmm. What about their relationship with the moms? Did you talk about that a lot?
We did. And Chris can talk to us some more about that. I mean, she's been a person who's been picking apart my transcripts, which is great because it's another eye, another ear, another person to triangulate how we get our information. The men had a really loving approach to the mothers. I mean, now, unfortunately, within every relationship, we're going to have some bad stories. But for the most part, these men were very excited to be a father. They have brought into the role of being a breadwinner, which is a very unfortunate role that many of these men could not fulfill because we have a 65% unemployment rate for black men on the north side of Milwaukee, and also the issues of incarceration that many of these men have faced based on the issues of how we, you know, Wisconsin's not done a great job at that. They can't get a job. And so those markers have been ways that these men have felt they've been deficient or unable to fulfill the roles that they would like to. But they've always spoke very highly of the mothers because the mothers were helping them to be a better dad. And mothers were carrying the load a lot of times. And so I very rarely heard anything about the mothers. I may have heard stuff about the state of Wisconsin as being a mother-focused state, but that's because the men don't understand social welfare policy, which is geared towards women and children for very good reasons. But I think conversations like this are really good to have and more continued conversations around just how men view their role and view the women who they're having children with is also, you know, helps to clarify some of the things that we hear.
Were most of the men that you talked to in this study, were they living in the household with the mom and with the kids?
You know, I half and half. That data I don't know that we even collected as far as demographic data. But I think there's an important point. I've been looking at the research, and essentially, what the literature has shown is that even though men may not be living in the house, they have, especially black men, they have sometimes had a stronger relationship than their white counterparts who are not living in the homes. So it's been, you know, it's really interesting to read the research, and because I think sometimes we come with some preconceived ideas and perceptions, and it isn't until you dive into the literature, until you listen to the stories, that for me, there, you know, even there's been a shift in thinking and trying to understand what the actual experience is.
A minute ago, David talked about the fact that a lot of guys do not pay as much attention to their health as they perhaps should, or perhaps as close attention as women may to their bodies. Chris, coming from a health perspective, how do you change that? Did you in your conversations and looking at the situations that you and David explored, was there any answer that appeared before you that would say, hey, we need to do more of this to get guys plugged in?
We did hear some fascinating ideas. The texting, some fathers would love to receive texts when the mom of the baby is going through the prenatal period, and that's part of the work that we've been doing with the White House and other universities in Illinois. So texting and sending out health messages that way. There were other fathers that said they'd rather have a mentoring experience. So developing peer mentors and kind of teach one. I can't remember. It was like a teach one experience, but really developing peer mentors out in the community that can support new fathers. So I think there are ways. They also talked about the reception by the healthcare provider. So when they go to the doctor's visit with the mom, actually being able to participate in the visit.
So just knowing that it's okay to come along, that they're welcome to come along.
Exactly.
That may be, you know, a surprise to some, right?
And that's something that we've talked about with our current team of community collaborators who have suggested we might want to even do some kind of work around training physicians, training medical students on just how do you engage someone from the community or someone who may not be someone you're familiar with, or you may bring in your own implicit biases about and recognizing that. So we've talked about that. We've been trying to get funding. We need money. Except if anybody has any money. But we've been talking about that a lot, and because we do think that would be an important thing to do, even on a pilot basis, to figure out how to increase people's comfort with working with black men in particular. Because a lot of the men would say they would be in the room and not be asked any questions or anything be directed to them at all. They're just sitting there, but they know more about her health care. They see her more. They know her health status. They know what's going on, and they could answer it. Or they find themselves clarifying to the doctor or to her, no, remember when you were doing this last week and you had this kind of headache, and then that physician or that nurse will then direct their attention to them, but it's only after they offered and interjected themselves into the conversation that we saw that you know, people need to recognize the men's role. And that's just not black men. That's just across the board. We need to recognize men's role in this whole issue of pregnancy and parenting because it's not always the case in many, many facilities.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is David Pate. David is an associate professor in the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, and his colleague, Chris Barnikow, who's an associate professor in the College of Health Sciences. A great example of interdisciplinary research, right? You know, we talk a lot about how people can't be in their silos anymore in universities, and it sounds like this is a wonderful expression of how you two, coming from different backgrounds, are producing some very different and perhaps better research because of the complementary nature of the work that you're doing.
Now, I think that's really true. One thing that I was able to do, too, as someone who's in the social work but who studies policy, was one thing I learned was when the men talked about wanting to go with the mother of their children, neither one of them had a car, so they would use a cab. And in our current Badger Care system, it will cover the cost of a cab to your health care visit, but it would only cover the cost of the mother and her child. Not the father. So the father would get in the cab, and the cab driver would say, well, no, the voucher only says the mother or the pregnant person and the child. So he would, one father gave an example, well, he took a bus to meet her there, and by the time he got there, the visit was over, and he was really disappointed, but he was trying to be an engaged father. But sometimes it may be just an unintended consequence that someone didn't recognize. If we're trying to engage men, that's not the message you want to give them. And so that's something that we were talking about also within our team. So there's some very small policy changes that can make a difference. And so that's something that I also brought to the team that we just had a thought we hadn't really intended to think about. But the men brought it up as an example. And I do really think this whole idea of texting and the apps, the men talked about developing apps, you know, and putting apps on their smartphones because that would be another way for them to see how the baby looks each month. And some men did also say, I don't even want to be involved in this. I don't feel that's my role. You know, some men did go back to what you would think stereotypically of the 1950s dad. I don't know if it's 1950s or 60s dad. But it's some dad who just didn't want to be in the hospital room, but still wanted to be engaged in a way of knowing what do you do when you come home. So that's the place, again, where someone like Chris can be very involved in what do you do to it? How do you educate someone on just what are you going through each month, but also what are the further steps?
David, you talked before about the fact that a lot of the men that you interviewed are living in a violent community, mm-hmm. that they have seen a lot of death. Mm-hmm. They may have had friends who were shot or stabbed or mm-hmm. died violently. What impact did that have on their psyche as they were thinking about bringing new life into the world? I mean, were these men hopeful, or were they depressed that there's such a big gap between where they are and where they might want their kids to be someday?
I'm going to ask Chris to chime in on this too, because she's been really reading the transcripts a lot more than me lately. But the one thing I remember from the men is that the one thing I'm always impressed by is how hopeful these men are after I hear their stories, because they talk about some of the issues of being policed and how they're strip searched or just violated in ways that are just not humane, in my opinion, but also how they just really want to be an accepted male in a city that they live in. So I'm always impressed by that, and that's what keeps me doing my work, because I do have a sense of hope that my voice and my abilities of what I've been able to do will make a difference in their lives in some way at all possible. But also these men do bring an issue of mental health that I'm concerned about, that they are walking around depressed in ways that I don't think some of them even recognize, because it's become a norm within their community to witness violence, to witness trauma, to witness what I call toxic stress, where you don't know from day to day how you're going to make it. And when you do have a job, the hours are so erratic and the money is so erratic that you can't have any comfort where you're able to reduce the stress. And that's something what people go through when they're pregnant. And that's what causes some of this infant mortality, because you never get a place where you can say, I can sit down and relax now because everything's okay. Because they don't have, because I have a consistency in my life where I know my job, I know my day-to-day, even though my kids may bring it up every now and then where my stress is a little bit higher. But generally, I know my day-to-day. These families don't live with that. They live with what I call now toxic stress. And I don't know if, Chris, you have anything to add to that based on the transcripts you've been reading.
Well, I think going back to the concept of hope, there were dads that talked about how they needed to be supports for each other. They talked about going on camping trips and building up the community. So I do think that there is a sense of hope. There are leaders in the community that want to spread that hope, but at the same time, it is a difficult environment, and they did talk about that. And as far as thinking about the stress, and David brought up a really good point about the toxic stress and how that affects pregnancy, when we think about infant mortality, we need to look at the leading cause of infant mortality, and it's actually preterm birth. For a long time, we've been focusing on co-sleeping. We've heard probably more about co-sleeping, but 60% of the deaths, the early deaths, can be attributed to preterm birth. So I think and decreasing that stress is part of helping to decrease the risk for preterm birth. We also, I recently learned that women in the state of Wisconsin have a higher, they're making decisions to smoke while they're pregnant. So this is another, and Wisconsin really has one of the highest rates of pregnant women smoking. I spoke with a woman from March of Dimes. And so this is another aspect where we can engage the men. We can help support the men to support the women to quit smoking, because that will definitely reduce their likelihood of preterm birth. So, you know, there's really some exciting opportunities that we have. And I can only say that from the one I attended a large group meeting with all the men, they came together, and we wanted to check with them and make sure we were understanding what they were saying. And, you know, they're excited and they want to participate, and they actually said, don't leave it here. Don't stop now. Don't, you know, let's do something. Make this real for us.
Because they saw you were interested and you were concerned, and how much better we would be if this whole community felt that same empathy and that same desire to change. What can we do? I mean, one of the beauties of this program is we're able to perhaps break down some stereotypes, provide information. But what do you think the community of Milwaukee, the Milwaukee area, can do to get these dads in a position where they can be more successful?
Well, there's several things I think the community can do. One is provide more opportunities for employment, provide better opportunities for education. But also, more importantly, understand that these men are humane and human people who have children and want to be engaged. The one thing I've learned over my 20 years of research in Milwaukee is that I have not heard of any of the men I've ever interviewed. I've interviewed over at least 300 or 400 men in this city in the last 20 years. Every one of them wants to be involved with their children. Every one of them wants to be a good person. Every one of them wants to try to do the right thing. But I think often opportunities aren't there. But I think on a small scale, even with just this, with this program, if we could just recognize their role early on as a parent, when they want to be engaged, that we recognize that they're in that room, that they're in that room with their mother of the child, that we recognize that they have a presence, and also that we do more programs like this to make them more humane and more substantive, other than something that we will see on the regular news stations that is always vilifying or starting a news story that bleeds, that shows something that's not very good. But also have more conversations about men and race. I just really think that's going to help a lot.
And Chris?
Well, I have to agree, and I've worked with graduate students. We've worked with graduate students on the transcripts, and to really have them read the stories was transformative. And so I do believe just by talking, learning more about what's happening in the community, learning about their people's interests and how everybody wants a strong community, but we do have to pull together and look at some of the barriers and address those barriers.
And let that dad get in the cab and go with the mother and the child to the doctor's appointment. I mean, some of those very, very simple things that should be a no-brainer. Well, David, Chris, thank you so much for taking time today to share your wonderful story about this collaborative effort. And we'll all say a prayer that the end goal is reached someday, where we do provide a great environment for everybody to be a successful parent here in our community. Chris Barnico, Associate Professor at UWM's College of Health Sciences, and David Pate, also an Associate Professor in the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week's program. We will see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.